This is the Bloomington Review with Jim Inman
on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL.
Good evening, Bloomington. Welcome to the Bloomington Review. Jim Inman here with you on the first Friday of March 2018. Hard to believe that we are already in month three. Weren't we just doing holiday music and canopy of lights and all that other stuff just a couple of weeks ago? And yet, here we are into March. And if you follow the wonderful groundhog out there and his philosophy of six more weeks of winter, well, that happened on February 2nd. It's March 2nd. So my general calendar math tells me we have roughly 2 weeks of winter weather in the forecast. We'll tell you what the forecast is here in just a couple moments when we take a break and come back with that and your local news. But glad you're joining us on a Friday night, a very busy Friday night here on WGCL as we have the Columbus East Sectional coming up in just a little bit. East Central, they are 14-9. We'll be taking on Bloomington High School South tonight, South being 24-2. Chalk Talk will be right after the Friday night broadcast of the Bloomington Review. So tip is expected to be around 7:30 p.m., but there is a first game, two games tonight over at Columbus East. So depending on when that game gets over with, we'll determine when the second game with Bloomington High School South actually gets started. So again, keep your eyes open at WGCLradio.com and also Facebook.com/WGCLradio, and Glass and the crew will have all of your updates on that this evening. I hope you had the opportunity to listen to last week's show with Dr. Piller and myself, along with Gene Scallon, as we spoke about mental health issues, not just in our area, but across the country. Had some good feedback on it from a number of people, a number of listeners. And, you know, it's not a topic that everybody wants to hear about and focus on, but by the same token, it's something that is very important and impacts a number of people. Actually had a situation personally this week with a good friend of mine going through some rough times. And again, as Gene said last week in the conversation, sometimes you just need to be that listening ear. And so I was fortunate enough to be the one to help my friend. And I'm not saying this is an ego stroke or anything, but just simply the fact that there are people out there that need some help. Please give them your time, because sometimes that's all you need to give them, and that can be a great gift to offer. 100 Men Who Cook was last Saturday evening. Dr. Piller and I were rock stars of the evening, so to speak. It was a rock and roll theme, and we dressed up as Wayne and Garth from Saturday Night Live, and fortunately, we were the only two that dressed up like that, and so it was a fun night, some great fundraising done that evening, and we'll get some pictures posted up at Facebook.com/TheBloomingtonReview. But coming up in a few moments, Craig Hickman from ProBlue IT is going to be joining us. We're going to talk about a number of IT issues, especially if you're going to be traveling for spring break in a couple of weeks. What do you do if your television in your hotel says log into your Netflix account? Should you connect to the hotel Wi-Fi? What about kids and social media? Those are just a few of the topics that we're going to discuss in just a few moments. So I encourage you to stick around for the full hour of the Bloomington Review, whether it's Friday night or you're waking up and having a cup of coffee with us on a Saturday morning as well. Facebook.com/TheBloomingtonReview. And, of course, WGCLRadio.com for the live stream. We're going to take a break, come back with your forecast and some local news, and then Craig Hickman from ProBlue. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bloomington Review. Jim Inman here with you. And in case I did not mention it in the first segment, Dr. Piller is on assignment this week, but hopefully we will see him back here next week as we get lined up for spring break. Your forecast for the weekend, mostly clear with a low around 26 on your Friday night. A beautiful Friday, by the way. Saturday, sunny with a high near 50, so pretty close to what we had on Friday. Clear and low around 26 on Saturday evening. And then on Sunday, sunny with a high near 53. So a very pleasant weekend overall. But then wait, as the television late night shows say, but wait, there's more. Monday, slight chance of snow early in the morning, then rain throughout the day and into Tuesday. Highs will be in the low 50s on Monday and Tuesday and dropping into the 40s Wednesday and Thursday. And of course, all your weather all the time right here at WGCL Radio and of course WGCLRadio.com. So those of you who are listening on Saturday, tomorrow is your day to make history in the state of Indiana. By doing what, you may ask? going to a local liquor store and purchasing alcohol for the first time in Indiana's history. Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb made history on Wednesday this week when he signed the new law legalizing the carryout sale of alcohol on Sundays. For decades, efforts to overturn the law foundered among bickering by interest groups, most notably liquor store owners who stood to lose business to big box retailers on a major shopping day. But that opposition evaporated this year, and starting on Sunday, as I mentioned, Hoosiers will be able to buy carryout alcohol between noon and 8 p.m. at liquor stores, convenience stores, pharmacies, and big box retailers across the state. There's absolutely no need any longer to make a run for the border, according to Governor Holcomb, referring to the time-honored tradition of those living near Indiana's borders of crossing state lines to purchase alcohol on Sunday. Today, this past Wednesday, is a big day, and it's all about the consumer. So what is the history behind all of this? Well, Indiana has restricted Sunday alcohol sales since becoming a state in 1816. Now, some Sunday sales were allowed for travelers during the 1800s, but that practice was banned in the 1850s. An exception was made for alcohol use for, quote, sacramental, mechanical, chemical, medicinal, or culinary purposes, according to an overview published by the Indiana Law Journal. Indiana is now the 41st state to allow Sunday liquor sales. This new law will allow an estimated 3,800 liquor stores, groceries, pharmacies, and convenience stores to sell any alcoholic product between noon and 8 p.m. on Sundays. Restaurants and bars, of course, have long been allowed to sell alcohol by the glass on Sundays, but those with carryout licenses will also be available to offer such sales 7 days a week. On the other side of the coin, protests continue on around Bloomington, both for and against the armored vehicle purchase by the Bloomington Police Department. Tuesday night, there were a lot of comments and discussions about this at the City Board of Public Safety meeting. Nearly 2 weeks ago, as we've talked about here on the Bloomington Review, Mayor John Hamilton promised in his State of the City address that the Board of Public Safety would hold a discussion of the policies surrounding the city's purchase of the $225,000 armored vehicle. The Board of Five mayoral appointees heard Bloomington Police Chief Mike Dekoff's explanation and the public's input, but refused to answer whether the city would reverse its course or continue with the purchase. Chief Dekoff said in an article to the HT, "I view this as an insurance policy. Every time we activate our critical incident response team, the CERT, they're going into situations where they don't have the proper protections they need. This is an urgent enough situation that I'm not willing to risk their safety anymore." In the case of an active shooter, Dekoff said, the decision to request a CERT team would be vetted by a street supervisor on scene, the CERT's commander, a shift lieutenant, the captain of operations, the deputy chief, and finally Dekoff in his role as chief of police. In other words, it's not simply a call it when you need it kind of thing. When pressed for details by the board, Dekoff said the vehicle would never be loaned to other agencies nor driven as a patrol vehicle. He said the critical incident response team would incorporate vehicle training into its monthly review of procedures, such as conducting building searches and dealing with barricaded subjects. These meetings have been ongoing about the issue, and the board will continue its discussion about the purchase of the vehicle at its March 20th meeting, 5 p.m. City Hall on North Morton Street. And one other quick note to acknowledge here from Indiana University. For the second year in a row, reports of student sexual misconduct have declined at IU's Bloomington campus. In an article in the Herald Times this week, the type of sexual misconduct and the outcome of the reports, as well as other data, were included in the recently released IU Office of Student Welfare and Title IX annual report for 2016 and 2017. The annual report provides some level of transparency for a subject that is both sensitive and shrouded in secrecy because of privacy laws. And while numbers in the report are important, they only tell part of the story, according to Emily Springston, IU's Chief Student Welfare and Title IX Officer. An increase in reports of sexual misconduct classified as stalking could be related to the numerous social media platforms students are using, as there were 20 reports of stalking in 2016-17 compared to 12 incidents in the year prior. Also, there is only one sexual misconduct report characterized as sexual exploitation. That's a significant decrease from the 2015-2016 school year when 11 sexual misconduct reports were placed in that category. And despite the decrease in the total number of reports, the same number of cases went through the university's education process. And that can be a good thing because of the overall impact it can have on an investigation. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Craig Hickman from ProBlue IT. We're talking internet security for you and your family while you're at home and on the road. Stay with us. We will be right back. Welcome back once again to the Bloomington Review. Jim Inman here with you, and finally in the studio after a bout of laryngitis and the holidays and countless other things, Craig Hickman from ProBlue. Welcome back, and welcome to 2018, sir.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me back. I appreciate
Happy to have you. You have been missed, and tried to get you on a couple times, and schedules just, you're a busy guy.
It's been a busy 6 months. Yes. Seriously has. Yep.
And I want to make sure I get this right. Vice President of Sales for ProBlue and Senior Design Engineer.
That's right. I design things.
You do.
Yes.
You do. Well, I wanted to have you back on because we have talked all about this internet security and things like that. And I sent you some questions beforehand. So I want to talk a little bit about traveling, because especially as people are going to be heading out for spring break in a couple of weeks and so on. Back in October, me and two friends road tripped out to D.C. and Baltimore for a college friend's wedding. Stayed in a couple different hotels because we were bouncing around and everything. And we were in one hotel, and when we checked in, the television offered Netflix, but you had to sign in to your profile. And so they were like, "Jim, sign in." So okay, sign in, no problem. I don't remember signing out from Netflix. somebody in Baltimore.
That would be a problem.
Exactly. So let's talk a little bit about what people should be aware of if they travel and things with signing into hotel Wi-Fi or getting on Netflix on the hotel television. Give me some thoughts.
So the Netflix, I've actually done that as well. I've been to a few hotels that have offered that now, which is actually really convenient because you can log in and see just your stuff and, you know, the convenience of Netflix. But in theory, when you check out, that TV should reset. But if you forget to sign out your account before you leave, you can actually log on to your Netflix account and disconnect all known devices.
Oh, really? Okay.
And you can see the devices that you have actually have signed up with. And you can disconnect them all. The only caveat is that you'll have to re-sign your local devices back in.
Yeah, but
you'll definitely disconnect that TV that you did in Baltimore or wherever it is that you were.
DC or Baltimore, one of the two, I forget.
As in them getting any information from your Netflix account, I doubt it. That's all encrypted, that sign-in process.
Okay, good.
Unless that's a hacked TV, which is highly unlikely.
Well, I worry about, I shouldn't say worry, but...
Your list?
No. I worry about the TVs that listen to you anymore.
Well, that's true. The smart TVs in a hotel room with a camera built in, I would definitely not would want one of those in my room. But I haven't seen one yet that does that.
Let's back up.
Most of the new TVs don't have cameras in them anymore. They did a run there for a while. They actually had cameras at the top of the TV.
Really?
Samsung had them. Sony had them, where you could use Skype with the TV and actually use the TV as a video phone.
I did not know that.
But a lot of those, they don't really have, they've kind of come back on that. They don't really do 3D TVs anymore either.
No, I still see the curved ones.
Yeah, the gimmicky curve.
But I'm happy with what I've got, and until it dies, I don't really need to worry about it, I guess.
But in regards to the Wi-Fi.
Yes.
So I've been in situations when I've been in the hotel Wi-Fi, and I see Wi-Fi, and I get on it, and it's not the hotel. Even though it's the same name as the hotel. Someone's broadcasting a mimic of the hotel. So you have to be careful when you use hotel Wi-Fi. Usually the large chains, you don't really have to worry about so much. But it is possible for someone in a nearby room to rebroadcast the same Wi-Fi, and their attempt is to potentially grab some information from your connection. And you'll see this. I also see this in airports or any type of large communal area where you'll see Wi-Fi.
Convention center. Not necessarily ours, but a convention type thing.
You'll see similar Wi-Fi to what you think you're supposed to connect to, but it's not. Sometimes it could be a rogue Wi-Fi access point.
Really? Huh. Well, and then speaking of the rogue stuff, I heard, because I read it on the internet and it was true, that if you have a Bluetooth device in your vehicle, like if you rent a car or something, that can actually pull information potentially as well. You know anything about that?
It will pull your device. If your Bluetooth is on your phone, if you leave your Bluetooth on your phone, it will actually ping out. And so, for instance, some wireless access points, some of the enterprise ones, they can actually track you where you are physically just based on your Bluetooth of your phone. So not, and also your Wi-Fi as well. Mm-hmm. But as for the vehicle to actually access your phone and pull information off, I find that unlikely because you would need some sort of PIN or, you know, to authorize that sync. Because when you go into your, let's say, your iPhone or Android and you say pair device, you'll see devices and you actually have to select it to pair. Mm-hmm. So would I pair my phone with a rental car? Yeah.
Not a big deal.
Yeah, I stream my music through the Bluetooth. I would. If I'm going to have it for a while, mm-hmm. I would probably do that. Now, I wouldn't sync my contacts with the phone, with the car. You can choose that, but I would not choose that.
Right.
But I don't know. I would think car manufacturers would probably want to steer away from that.
What about if you have an Amazon stick, Amazon Fire, or a Roku or something like that, and you want to travel with that? Any concerns about plugging that into a television to watch whenever you're out and about?
I do that.
Other than getting it before you leave the hotel?
I do. When we travel to Sanibel, we'll take our Roku or whatever with us, and I'll log on to the Wi-Fi with it and mm-hmm. access everything. The only thing I run into is when you're sometimes in a hotel and they have what's called a garden wall where you have to sign on and put in a PIN code, you'll have a hard time getting that to work with a Roku or Fire Stick mm-hmm. unless you can bring up a browser mm-hmm. to get past that. I know the Fire Stick or Fire TV, you can actually get past it. The Roku, I don't know yet if they have actually solved that scenario where you can bring up a browser. I think you can bring a browser up in Roku now. Because you got to get past the garden wall. Because you got to log in with your room number, your name.
Right.
Once you're past that, then you can log on and watch your shows and everything. And there, I don't see any security problems with that. With using that,
good
if it works.
Okay.
The only thing I will tell you mm-hmm. is when you travel and you use a public kiosk computer, do not access anything sensitive with that machine, because you do not know the status of that computer. If it's infected, does it have a keylogger? Is it saving information? Because I know people that have traveled and used public computers and have their information stolen.
So if you're at the hotel and you need to print your boarding pass.
Typically, when you go to boarding pass, it's only asking for your name and your boarding number, which is it. And you print it out.
Yep.
You're not logging in to a site.
You go to your email to access it.
No.
Not smart.
No.
Okay. Do it on your phone.
Yeah.
And then find out what your stuff is and then do it on the printer.
Don't log in your bank. Don't log in your email. Nope. Not from a kiosk. Not from a public computer anymore.
Gosh. Wow. Anything else to think about traveling? Is spring breaky?
One of the things I get asked a lot is when people travel is with small children, ones they want to entertain, is they want to watch television. Like, you know, back in the day, we had a DVD player or a VHS tape player, and you had
a Walkman. You and I had Walkman.
Yeah. Black and white Walkman. So one of the things that I show people is that you can actually, a lot of the apps now, you can actually download the shows locally to your device and not have to use Wi-Fi or cellular data while you're traveling. You can actually watch the shows locally off of it. That's a really good way to save on your data plan and have convenience of having the shows local. Another great program is a Walter 2, Waltr 2. Mm-hmm. Any media that you might have locally on your computer, you can take that media and just dump it onto your phone and play it right off your phone without having to know anything about technology, really.
Okay.
Another one is as popular as SYC2. You can pronounce it however you want, but it will actually allow you to take any shows off of YouTube and dump them on your phone. So if you have a series or a show, you can take the entire series and just dump it on your phone mm-hmm. and watch it whenever you want and then delete them off. But that, again, saves on travel. It's great if you're on a long plane flight.
Sure.
Because a lot of planes don't let you – they'll let you have Wi-Fi, but they won't let you watch,
download
watch shows. But you can watch – typically, all of them have in-flight entertainment now that lets you stream a lot of stuff.
Sure.
Although I found a way around those. But we won't go into that discussion.
You are the man that knows a little bit of everything, and one of the things I love about you, Mr. Hickman. Internet at home. I know that there are things now where – your mom and dad and your kids have a slumber party or something. Of course, their friends have phones and they bring them over and everything. And you can let them onto your Wi-Fi at home and you can approve and things like that. What are your thoughts about giving
our house,
that access?
We have several Wi-Fi or SSIDs. And there is one for the kids and for friends. I have my own. And then there's one for all the other devices, all the smart devices that we have in the home. I keep those all separate. But when friends come over, they can get on the Wi-Fi, but it is controlled as to what they can and cannot do on our Wi-Fi. I'm sure the parents love that because I'm assuming some of the kids just turn off the Wi-Fi and just use their data plan because I'm sure they get frustrated sometimes because I don't allow certain things into my house. It's just, sure. It's just controlled. But everybody wants that technology. Everybody wants that finite control. And there are a couple ones that I've installed for friends. One is the Google Wi-Fi. Google has a great Wi-Fi mesh system that you can control all from your phone. So you can set it up fairly easily.
And it doesn't have to be that you have Google service, so to
no.
speak?
So this will work with your Comcast, your Smithville, or
Uverse, whatever.
You use it as your primary router, and then you can set up other little nodes in your home to expand your Wi-Fi coverage. So if you have a large place, you can actually make the Wi-Fi bigger without having to do any cabling.
Oh, wonderful.
So that saves on costs. And then Linksys Velop also has a product. It's not as well developed as the Google Wi-Fi, but it's faster. So if you need a lot of bandwidth and you need to be able to transfer files internally, that's a great solution. But those allow the parent to actually see who is connected to their devices. And if they want to ban somebody, they can.
Can people still hack into home Wi-Fi anymore?
They've fixed that. Hacking... Anybody can probably hack it if they really, really want to. But you got to have something at your house that somebody wants to access. They want to hack it, spend the time. But no, it would not the average user hacking. Unless, the easiest hack is just calling up and asking him for the password. And you'd be surprised how many people just hand it over.
Yes. I love the phone calls I get. And I think we've talked about it when you've been on before where someone calls and says, I'm calling about your home computer.
Yes.
And that we need to... work on it, and obviously very broken English and whatnot. And well, which computer is it? Your home computer. Not legit.
I like it when they call and ask for about my Windows PC, and they say, they want to look at it. I'm like, well, I'm sorry, but I have a Mac. And they're like, oh, we do those too, and it's Microsoft. And I'm like, my Microsoft operating system, my Mac, has been compromised. I'm like, well, let's have a discussion. And I take them through the whole. It's a great.
I was going to say, I would imagine
It's actually good entertainment for me because I have a good time. And I have a really hard time. I have a hard time keeping them on the phone because I have a hard time keeping a straight face when I'm trying to keep from laughing because I know the questions to ask.
Should somebody, if they're leaving on spring break, should they turn off their home Wi-Fi?
That in your water, maybe. But yes. Well, it depends on what you're using. If you have Nest or wireless cameras, no.
Sure.
Because you want to leave those on and keep that access. For instance, I would, if you have home security and you have wireless cameras, you would want not only have your access point on, but you would probably want it on a battery. So that if power's lost, your cameras are still working while you're gone. And then if you have any wireless security... have it on. The only thing you might want to think about is if you have any friends or family that you don't want to have access to your Wi-Fi while you're gone, that you've given out the password for, change the password. That can be easily changed when you come back. But then you got to think about your devices. That's why I have more than one SSID in my house. So I have my Internet of Things, all my smart devices, and I've got a lot of smart devices.
Sure.
Those have their own network. I don't have to worry about that password. I never give it out to anybody. Those are for those devices to talk and do their thing. And then I have the other access SSIDs for me and then friends and then family and so on. And the kids.
Sure.
So.
You got it covered, my friend. We are talking. I'm just thinking of so many things I want to ask you. We're talking with Craig Hickman from ProBlue IT. We're going to take a break. Come back with more talking about some internet security with kids. Talk about some printers, perhaps, and a little bit more. Stay with us. We will be right back. Welcome back once again to the Bloomington Review. We're talking with Craig Hickman, Senior Design Engineer and Vice President of Sales for ProBlue. We're solving all of the world's problems on the internet and the Internet of... You mentioned in the last segment Internet of Things. So can I ask, what do you have in your home that is one of these Internet of Things?
So Internet of Things is a device that is connected to the network and talks to the internet and is, can be controlled. I mean, there's a lot of different terminologies for it. Essentially, it's something with an IP address or has any type of network connectivity.
And this can be like the hall light switch.
Yeah, my light switches, my bulbs, my speakers.
Furnace, air conditioner.
Yes,
security
all that.
System.
Yeah.
All these things.
Last time I counted, I had like 85 devices connected.
Really?
all communicating. So when I leave the house, as long as there's nobody else in the house turns off.
And let me ask this. Are all of these things new, so to speak, or are you able to convert things? That, if you had grandma's lamp, can you make grandma's lamp?
Yeah, I've converted things.
Have you?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have a curio cabinet. It turns on and off with sunset, sunrise, you know, those sort of thing. So it's all programmed. It's great. It's great around holidays.
Sure.
Because I can have the certain lights come on and off at certain times. And then, you know, things turn off around 2 a.m. because I don't know who's up at that time,
but
the house turns off. And then when we travel, the house goes into a unique loop where it looks like somebody's home, and it's completely random.
You don't do the Home Alone thing where you get the guy on the turntable?
On the train and turns around. It's a good one. Actually, I could just shoot a projector at the and just play Home Alone.
There you go. You filthy animal.
Just play that.
Whatever it takes.
Over and over.
I don't have any of those things yet in my house. So that's still kind of a new thing to me.
The concern of Internet of Things is, can those devices be hacked and controlled and cause you problems at your house?
And can they be controlled if your internet goes out, if the power goes out? Obviously, light switches are a different thing, but do you lose any kind of ability if they...
When the internet goes out, the biggest thing when the internet goes out, Alexa stops working.
Sure.
That no longer works. The light switches physically still work.
Mm-hmm.
I can control, yes, the light switches still work with it because it's local network. So as my local network is still up, I can still control the light switches.
Yep.
But when the internet goes out, Alexa's out, streaming's all out, off-site video surveillance is out. However, I have two internet connections at my house.
Of course you do.
So
the backup.
They're both going at the same time. Uh-huh. So, it is annoying when the internet goes out.
When your power goes out, you can have a generator attached to your house. Can you have a generator of sorts for internet as well?
Well, all my networking is on a very large battery in the house, which will run for about 4 hours.
Okay.
So...
Okay.
Give or take, you know, that's more than enough time to compensate. But a generator, if you're going that far, then I would consider it probably a natural gas generator. Because that way, you know, if you have natural gas come to your home, you could just have that running perpetually for a very long time and power the house.
Good point. You mentioned Alexa, and then there's the Echo and all of these different devices that you can talk to now. Any thoughts? People sometimes think that
your Alexa... then you can get Alexa in a Sonos now. You got the HomePod. You got the Google Home. The Google Home is probably the smartest device out of all of them because it connects directly to Google.
Okay.
So it actually is much better answering questions. So my kids tell me. My concern, I mean, is it listening? Maybe. I don't know.
Sure.
Probably not. I do see data leaving my Amazon devices outbound. It's not a lot of data. It's communicating with Amazon, but I don't know if it's actually continuously recording all our conversations.
Right.
It is listening because whenever I say Alexa, it wakes up and it does what I tell it to do.
Yep.
In theory. But, you know, it depends on the type of person you are and what you're doing and are you concerned about these conversations being recorded. If you are someone who thinks can be under surveillance for any reason, you probably shouldn't have those devices.
Good point.
But if you are a good person and there's nothing for people to take from you, then I wouldn't worry about it. Could you turn that into a listening device? Yes, I think you could. I think it is possible.
Okay. Well, shift gears. You talked about your kids. We talk about them when they come on. You have three daughters and wonderful young ladies. And let's talk a little bit about what you're doing for internet security, social media monitoring, things like that, and what parents should think about.
This is another very common question that I get. The problem with kids is that they're very good at, you know, working the system and trying to figure out ways around it. My youngest two are very good. They come and ask me permission anytime an app has to be installed. I have their iPhones and iPads locked down. They can't install anything without my permission. They can't remove anything without my permission. And
these are things, and real quick, that anybody could do.
Yes.
It's not just because you're an IT guru of sorts.
These are just the basic things that I could do. So the basics, for instance, you could lock these devices down to where you can control what your kids can do with the devices and what apps they can install. I would not allow my kids to install any app from the App Store because there's apps out there that are not recommended for children. Social media is a totally different beast when it comes to social and with kids. I would not recommend kids having it until high school. Because my wife will attest to this, but she sees issues with kids with social media. But when it comes to if you really need to monitor your kids and you think you have a problem, there are tools that you can get. I know Symantec's got a product. There's a Symantec Family solution that you can get, the Family Premier. Then there's also the Phone Sheriff, and ESET has a product. Hmm. But to really get them an iPhone lock, Android's actually a lot easier to manage than an iPhone because Apple has it so locked down. In order to really get into the workings of an iPhone, you have to jailbreak it.
Oh, okay.
And then you get into but the problem with jailbreaking is that it'll eventually cause you future problems.
Sure.
And the average user probably shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
One thing I used to do, and then hopefully my children aren't listening to this conversation, and we won't tell them about this, is that I would have a duplicate device. So, for instance, Emma's iPhone, anything she did would replicate to another device that I had at our nightstand. Mm-hmm. It was a duplicate copy. So anything she did, it showed up on that. She didn't know about it. Mm-hmm. So I could get that device out and look at anything I wanted because it was a duplicate copy of everything that she was doing.
Sure.
So that was handy because then I never had to sneak in at night and look at her device. Mm-hmm. Another rule at my house is if I can't unlock your phone, it's mine. So I have to have no old passwords for the phone. If you won't give me the password, it's mine forever. You don't need it, obviously. So it's really harsh to be at my live in my house.
No,
I assume.
I think it's great actually. You're taking full charge.
I'm trying. It's a lot of work.
I would imagine. Are your rules that do you have parents that say, I wish I could do that with my kids, or tell me how I can do that with my kids?
I do. I have conversations with other parents, and I sometimes help with their devices on a case-by-case basis, yeah, trying to help them. Because sometimes they honestly are just frustrated. They have no idea what to do. And then they have a rebellious kid that just will not give them the password to a device, and then I'm having to come in and figure out a backdoor to something. Yeah. But iPhone devices are very hard to crack. Hmm. It's not an easy device to get into.
Which I guess then even goes to, every so often there'll be some story on the internet of police trying to crack the code to get into an iPhone.
Yeah.
Because some criminal
I saw a news article, I think it was either today or yesterday, where a company has created another way to crack into iOS 11.
Oh, really?
To get into it.
And when we say crack in, is it simply that four-digit code or whatever it is to lock it in?
I didn't read
in,
more into the article as to what they're accessing and how they're accessing it. But
because, I mean, you can potentially get in, but then apps, some of them have their own passcodes as well,
yes,
and things like that. So
yeah,
it's the double.
And that's
layer,
why
so to speak.
You control what apps go onto your child's device.
Sure.
Because there are some apps, for instance, my 10-year-old came to me, wanted an app installed, and I looked into it, and it was actually a hidden social media app.
Oh,
it
really?
Was hidden into iMessage, and I was like, no.
And did your 10-year-old know that that's what it was?
Or no,
was
she no, just like, no, because her friends have it.
Yeah. She just wanted to chat with her friends.
Yep.
But then it
Then it also opened up doorways to other people outside of her friends.
Yeah.
And that's where I don't want her to have to be in a situation where she's talking to people that are outside of her social circle.
Right.
She doesn't need to be influenced by older people.
Fair point. Anything else about on the kids' side of things that we should mention?
You discussed a little bit before we came on the show about, yep, Facebook Messenger.
Oh, yes. They want to do this for kids.
I don't recommend it. Don't promote it.
I would imagine. I would understand. Yes.
That's Facebook's goal because they're losing subscribers.
They're losing some popularity.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what is it about Facebook that you think is causing that shift? Because I've read that it's the old people's social media now.
Oh, my parents love it.
And yeah, I mean, it's great for putting photos up. But I think some kids are doing like Snapchat, Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram is popular that I've seen with the kids that I know.
Right.
Snapchat's not allowed at our house, so I don't know a whole lot about that because it's, mm-hmm, banned.
Yep. Actually, to again shift gears a little bit, businesses are starting to use Snapchat for things, and you can set up what they call a filter, I think, and like a photo filter, so that if you're at an event, you can take that photo on Snapchat, and then it will make this nice little image around it, like a picture frame that says,
"Oh, your product,
the Pro Blue Gala,"
gotcha,
kind of thing.
I understand.
Or the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, but Snapchat's
hours.
Not doing so well right now either, so
is
they're getting very creative with their, yeah.
Are we going to see a shift where people are getting away from social media, do you think, and go back to face-to-face communication again?
Or is it? I think it'll just evolve.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to go away.
And the last thing with that, and we've talked about this before, is people who have photos saved on old floppy disks or things yeah. like that, and you're running out of ways that you can get access to those because those methods of viewing items and whatnot.
You have photos on floppy disks?
No, but
okay.
I still have floppy disk from
okay.
years back, and a lot of it is college stuff.
Well, bring it to me. I got floppy drives.
I don't I'll need it. I haven't used it in 15 years, I don't need it. But my thing is, if you lost your Facebook account,
yes.
because there's now Facebook jail yes. if you abuse it or whatever, you could potentially lose countless yeah. memories. So the backing up of things, I think, is where
I really haven't
to.
Given much thought about the importance of getting the photos out of my Facebook account. I typically have those already somewhere else.
But a lot of people will.
But there's stories with
that.
A lot of with the pictures
yeah.
or conversations that you may or may not want to keep. I don't know.
I just know of one person in particular who was telling me recently that when they take family photos, they always load them up to Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
They don't put them on a portable hard drive or back it up anywhere. So if they lose Facebook, they've lost everything. And
so,
when you get 100 years down the line,
yeah.
and your great-great-grandchild wants to see what grandma looked like,
It is something that to think about the future, about media, because I know people that are putting things on hard drives, mm-hmm. and it may not work in 10 years.
Right.
Or I know that a lot of people burn things out to CDs or DVDs. Well, those only have shelf life about 10 years. Unless you use a certain brand. Mm. I've got stuff on tape. I don't have the tape drive anymore, so that's moot.
Yeah.
So
you got, I mean, I know my thing is old home movies, and my dad's been gone almost 15 years, and they're on VHS.
That would
definitely. They still work, but yeah. it's coming to the point where they
will
not.
Well, VHS, I think, is rust-based. It's magnetic, so eventually you need to do something. I don't know if it's 15 years of shelf life for VHS tape, but you definitely need to get it migrated over. But, you know, I worry about that. I got tons of photos of mm-hmm. the kids and video, and I've gotten very crazy about it. It's in five places. So I've got a mix of Dropbox, Google Photo, Amazon Photo, and then it's replicated to another place, and then there's also a copy, I think, at the office. So, but
you're covered for the most
but
part.
But the thing is, the electronic media, we're creating a lot of electronic media, and the debate is how much, where do we store it all?
Right.
We keep, yeah.
The cloud.
Yeah.
But that's for another conversation.
We can have another cloud conversation
running
another
out of time.
Time.
So, Craig Hickman from ProBlue IT, I'm very glad you came in, my friend.
You're welcome. I appreciate it.
Always good. Senior design engineer and vice president of sales. And anytime something comes up, please let us know.
I will.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Stay with us. We're running short on time, so a very quick sports update for you. Of course, if you're catching us on Friday night, be sure to stay tuned right after the show for the Columbus East Sectional. East Central will be taking on Bloomington High School South. Chalk Talk at 7 o'clock, tip right around 7:30. It's the second game of the night. So depending on when the first game gets done, make sure that you stay tuned for the Bloomington South game here on WGCL. We'll have NCAA coverage for you again this weekend. Big Ten tournament available, so lots of stuff going on. Then on Monday, the March 5th, the MAC Championship, 6:45 p.m., and then the Southern Conference Championship at 8:45. Tuesday night, the CAA Championship, 6:45, and the West Coast Conference Championship at 8:45 p.m. Wednesday night, March 7th, Patriot League Championship, 7:15 p.m. And then next Friday, on the 9th, the Pac-12 semifinal doubleheader starting at 8:45 p.m. All of this information is available at WGCLradio.com. IU Hoosiers are 6-1 right now. They are in San Diego as we speak, playing a four-game series out there, and then they make their way home to the Bart Kaufman Field, starting with the first game at the Bart this Wednesday, March 7th, 4 o'clock, against Cincinnati. IU Lady Hoosiers are playing again tonight, Friday night, 6:30 p.m., against number 2 Maryland. That comes after a not one, not two, not three, but four overtime victory on Thursday night, defeating number 10 Michigan State, 111-109. Holy cow, what a game. IU men's basketball ended up the season 16-5. They lost to Rutgers in the second round of the Big Ten tournament in New York. We'll see what happens with that as we move forward. And Indianapolis Pacers, they're 34-27 right now. They're playing on Friday night, 8 o'clock, against the Milwaukee Bucks. Then on Sunday against the Wizards. And then Monday again against the Milwaukee Bucks. IUHoosiers.com has all of your information. Make sure that you check that out and see what's going on with the Hoosiers. And especially keep up with the Lady Hoosiers, Tyra Buss, and their great season. And hopefully we see a couple more wins in the column for them. We're going to take a break and wrap up the show. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Just a couple minutes left in the program. Thanks again to Craig Hickman from ProBlue IT for joining us. We'll put some information up at facebook.com/TheBloomingtonReview and also WGCLradio.com. So make sure that you check that wonderful stuff out. Your forecast for the weekend is pretty awesome, especially if you've been enjoying this Friday weather. Friday night, mostly clear, a low around 26. Saturday, sunny with a high near 50. Saturday night will be clear with a low around 26. And then Sunday, more of the same. Sunny with a high near 53. There is a slight chance of the white stuff, the snow, to return on Monday morning early and then transition into rain throughout the day and into Tuesday. Highs will be in the 50s Monday and Tuesday and then drop into the low 40s Wednesday and Thursday. But of course, all your weather all the time right here at WGCL Radio and WGCLradio.com. Not sure what the schedule is going to be for next week, and then we'll be doing a best of during spring break week in a couple of weeks. I know that we have Bruce Calloway and Steve Bryant coming on in a couple of weeks to talk about the Duke It Out competition at Ivy Tech. And we've got some good stuff coming up, I promise you. So make sure that you stay tuned to WGCL for all of that. Our friends at Visit Bloomington always send out some great stuff that's going on in the community. It's too late for the Friday, but Saturday, 9 to 4 at the Monroe Convention Center, is the 27th Annual Indiana Heritage Quilt Show. Great exhibit if you have someone that's a quilter in your family. Go check that out. $10 per day for that. Greg Warren will be at the Comedy Attic on Friday and Saturday night, 8 p.m. and 10:30 shows there. And then on Saturday, the Wiley House Annual Heirloom Seed Sale begins at 10 a.m. Over 70 varieties of heirloom flowers, herbs, and vegetables will be available. So you might check that out. And on Sunday, the IU Cinema, Baharo Mastani, and I should have learned to pronounce that before I said it, 3 to 5:30 p.m. on Sunday out at the IU Cinema on East 7th Street. It's a winner of 12 International Indian Film Academy Awards and lots of good stuff. Visit Bloomington.com. Check it out and see what all is going on in the world. Enjoy the nice weather, folks. Again, WGCLradio.com. Check out all of our past shows and stay up to the latest. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.